A bright light shines from a torch held aloft by a woman in a white and blue robe standing atop a plinth. It's the logo of Columbia, a Sony Pictures Entertainment company. Chinese characters and a shining star logo. The Star Overseas Limited. The opening credits appear in Chinese characters over a shot of a butterfly as it flies inside a barren, rocky canyon. A film by Stephen Chow. The butterfly flutters upwards and the sun bursts over the top of the canyon. Viewed from above, the canyon is revealed to be giant stone Chinese characters spelling out the title. Kung Fu Hustle. Fading up from black, a sign on a desk says, Inspector Chan. Chan, a middle-aged man wearing a white shirt and tie, sits at his desk listening to the sounds of a struggle. Beyond his office, in a small refectory, some other officers sit, listening intently. Upstairs, more uniformed officers listen to the struggle. Hanging from the ceiling nearby is a large sign with gold letters saying, Crime Busters. Suddenly, a policeman is hurled into the sign and he crashes to the floor in front of Inspector Chan's desk. The boss of the crocodile gang steps forward past three of his henchmen and yells,
Anyone else?
The police all go back to their work. The boss takes his Stetson off and indicates a young woman sitting nearby.
Such a beautiful woman, and you arrest her just for spitting. Is there no justice? Is there no law?
He walks over to a beaten-up policeman.
Your boss is only commissioner because he paid his dues to the crocodile gang.
The boss calls down to the officer who hit the sign.
And you don't fucking know me?
Sorry, I didn't know she was your wife,
says the beaten-up policeman. The boss spits on him.
You still talk nonsense.
He kicks a pan of scalding water over the policeman. Then he, his wife and his men head out. He spots Inspector Chan staring at them.
What are you looking at? Never seen such a handsome gang boss?
Chan quickly shuts his office door. The mobsters step into the nighttime street outside. The boss looks across at a cinema and says,
Who'd be in the film business? It's Sunday and the theater's deserted.
His wife says,
Where's the car?
They look up and down the deserted street. The boss says,
Let's go back inside.
As they hurry back towards the police station, the officers lock the doors and close all the windows. As the crocodile gang look round, they see a large mob of men in black suits walking down the street towards them. Turning around, they see a similar mob closing in behind them, and from a third street at the T-junction. The boss,
Call for help!
One of his men pulls out a flare and fires it into the air. One of the men in black, wearing a white trilby, says,
No need for that, Northerner. While you were messing with the cop, your men signed up with us.
I'll kill all you axe gangsters.
The boss's men pull their guns, but are mown down by the axe gang's machine gunners. The boss makes a run for it, but a portly man in black with a moustache hurls a hatchet at him. As the boss runs, the spinning blade lops his left leg off below the knee. The boss falls to the ground. The man with the white hat holds out his hand and a henchman passes him a hatchet. The man then advances on the fallen boss, doing a little dance. The boss holds his hand up and says,
Stop! Remember the time I treated you to dinner?
The man in the white hat responds by frenziedly hacking at him with the hatchet, losing his hat in the process. When he's finished, the man who threw the first axe comes over and says,
Brother Sum.
He looks to his left and Brother Sum follows his gaze. The boss's mole cowers nearby. She says,
Doug, big brother, please spare me.
Brother Sum replies,
Don't be silly. I don't kill women. You can go.
Thank you, big brother.
She turns to go. Brother Sam indicates to a sidekick who hands him a shotgun. He cocks it and shoots her in the back, the force of the blast throwing her forwards. Brother Sam dances off, tossing the shotgun to the axeman, who calls to the police station.
Cops, come out and clean up the mess!
Inside, Inspector Chan wipes his profusely sweating face and counts out a pile of banknotes. The picture freezes and goes into black and white. Brother Sam dances with a hatchet in one hand on a parquet floor. Photographs of a murder victim with an axe in his chest. Two more axe-wielding hoodlums join Brother Sam in the dance. More photos of axe murder victims lying slaughtered in a car. The number of dancing mobsters increases. Photos of an axe at a crime scene. The mobsters continue their axe dance. In a nighttime street, neon signs glow. One says, "The Powell Club." The mobsters dance on, raising their hands in time. Sophisticated-looking punters gamble at gaming tables in a casino. Watching them is the axe thrower and a couple of sidekicks. In a casino office, vast piles of cash are counted by a man with an abacus. The mobsters dance climaxes with them raising their axes into the air. A caption says, "The Axe Gang." Another caption on black. In a time of social unrest and disorder, the gangs run amok. The most feared of them all is the Axe Gang. Only in the poorest districts, which hold no interest for the gangs, can people live in peace. Pigsty Alley is just such a district. A dilapidated tenement block sits back from a grubby, crowded square. In a washhouse, people make their morning ablutions. In the square, others do their exercises. A coolie is loaded with three heavy sacks.
One, two, three. That okay, coolie?
No problem!
The coolie then uses his right foot to kick a fourth sack up into the air and catch it on his back. Heavily laden, he wanders off. In a tailor's shop, the tailor takes a pair of trousers down off a high rail with a long pole. A sign outside the shop says, "Tailor." A couple of doors down from his shop is another with a sign saying, "Noodles and Congee." Inside, the chef is making dumplings with a rolling pin. At a table, a mustachioed man, the landlord, finishes a meal, uncorks a bottle and takes a swig.
My check, please, donut.
The chef offers him a package.
How much?
It's on the house.
Donut.
It's nothing.
I like you. I'll ask the wife about lowering your rent.
Thank you.
As the landlord goes, first a man, then a woman greets him.
Morning, landlord.
Landlord?
Jill, how you've grown. Come, let me give you a physical exam.
Grinning, the landlord wanders into the tailor's shop and slaps the tailor's backside.
Good to see you, landlord.
What's so good about it?
The landlord playfully prods the tailor. An attractive girl comes out of the back room carrying a dress.
Can you make the skirt slip higher?
Sure.
Look, a comet.
The girl looks and the landlord brings his face close to hers. As she turns back, she inadvertently gives him a kiss.
Jane, you naughty girl.
Landlord, you're such a scoundrel.
Jane runs out of the shop.
Don't go, Jane. Stay and chat. I'm only kidding. Jane!
As the landlord runs after her, he passes a man washing his hair under a standpipe. The man pulls his trousers down and rinses himself off. Suddenly, the water goes off. He fiddles with the tap, then calls up to a window.
Landlady?
Bao zhou po.
The landlady appears at a window, fag in mouth, rollers in hair.
What happened to the water?
The formidable landlady comes downstairs at implausible speed and marches down some steps into the square. She strides towards the hair washer.
Water ain't free. You talk a lot for someone who won't pay his rent.
But I'm in the middle of a shampoo.
So what? From now on, no water on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays. Water ration Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays. See if you fools dare complain again. Arseholes.
Good morning, landlady.
Good, you old ass. Just pay your rent or I'll burn down your shop. What's so funny? Rent's no laughing matter, fairy.
The tailor at whom this last brickbat was aimed scuttles off. She turns her fire on the coolie.
Serves you right, you're a coolie. Months overdue and not even a good morning. You'll be a coolie for life.
She marches up behind the hair washer and whacks him on the side of the head, bowling him over.
There you go, handsome.
The landlady catches up with her husband, the landlord, who hovers outside a doorway.
What took you so long with the congee?
I stopped to help an old lady cross the street.
Then what are you doing here?
Checking for peeping Toms. Was someone just spying on you, Auntie Six? Don't shoot your mouth off without proof.
The landlady notices a lipstick stain on his cheek.
She's crazy.
The hair washer rinses his hair with some water from a drain. Some shutters burst open on a window above, and the hair washer watches as the landlady gives her husband a vigorous thumping, then chucks him out of the window. He falls about four stories, smashes through an awning, and lands face down on the ground. As people step towards him, a plum pot lands on the back of his head and cracks in half. The hair washer picks up a stick and cautiously prods the inert landlord with it. He waves his arm.
Go away.
The sun beats down on some waste ground nearby, where some boys are playing football. As the ball bounces away, it's stopped by a man who does a bit of fancy footwork with it.
Please, can you teach us, sir?
No more soccer!
The man stamps on the ball, bursting it. As he and another man walk off, one of the boys starts to cry. The two men, their faces shaded by straw hats, stand outside the entrance to Pigsty Alley. They walk slowly, side by side, into the square, in step with each other. They wander into a barber's shop and sing. The man who crushed the football removes his hat. The barber gets up.
Who wants the cut?
My boss.
The barber removes the boss's hat.
Take a seat.
Singh regards the barber, who is suffering from a very bad case of builder's bum. The barber smiles and gets on with the haircut.
Done. 50 cents, please. Isn't it great?
It's too good. Why do you make him look so good? Are you making fun of him?
The boss shrugs his coat off, exposing his lardy chest, which has two crossed axes tattooed on it.
Don't get mad, boss. He's my old buddy. I'll handle this. He's boss of the axe gang. Don't you see the two axes? We're bad guys. Making him look good is really bad, understand?
I didn't know.
You're a numbskull. But I like you, so just pay me and I'll take care of it.
No way.
The boss bangs his fists, making his lard ripple.
Steady with the axe, boss. Let me talk to him. I really care for you. You saw it for yourself, seriously. Why don't you pay him? Not much, enough for a drink.
Oh, so it's blackmail.
Boss! Boss!
The boss is fast asleep.
Hello?
Hello? Now you're dead. Looks like he's waking up.
I'm not afraid. You can kill me, but there'll be thousands more of me.
A crowd of Pigsty Alley residents crowd around the shop. Singh turns to face them.
You want to play tough? The ex-gang boss is napping in there. Whoever wants to die, please step forward.
The crowd steps forward as one.
So, you want to fight? Great. We'll go one-to-one. Don't even think about cheating. That old woman with the onion.
The woman steps forward.
You look real tough. Want to try me? I'll let you hit me first.
The woman punches him in the stomach, making him cough up some blood.
What do you do?
I'm a farmer.
Farmers don't fight. Piss off.
It's crazy.
You calling me names? You're lucky you're a woman.
Singh scans the crowd.
Hey, shorty. Yeah, you. If you're short, you don't retort.
The man stands up and steps forward, revealing him to be about 7 foot tall.
What did I say about cheating? Sit back down.
The man does so, and Singh picks out an older, bespectacled man in the crowd.
You, the geezer with the glasses, you look mean.
The man steps forward, revealing him to be built like the proverbial brick outhouse.
No, not you. I mean, you. Hey, kid, let's rumble.
He picks on a boy who's also built like a brick outhouse.
All right, all right. Not even one of you can fight. You're all such wimps. So no one-on-ones today.
The barber appears behind Singh with the landlady.
He blackmailed me.
Fat woman, you're in charge here, right?
She slaps him.
Fat woman, my arse.
I'm with the Axe Gang.
Axe Gang, my arse. Boss, my arse.
You have to pay our medical bills.
Medical bills, my arse.
Hey, we're on the same side.
Same side, my arse.
Think you're so tough? I'll call for backup.
You nitwit, let's see what backup you've got.
You don't know the backup I have. You're talking an army here.
Singh throws a firecracker.
Don't you go away. Go put a down payment on your coffin.
The axeman, wearing a smouldering white straw trilby, appears around a corner, accompanied by a large group of hoods wearing black suits. He looks at the crowd.
Who threw the firecracker?
Singh walks over to the smouldering axeman.
I'm one of you, brother.
He points out the landlady. The axeman and his gang walk purposefully towards her. She spots a crossed axe tattoo on his chest. A bank of clouds sweeps in with the gang, darkening the scene. Fag in mouth, the landlady turns to the other residents.
Why are you guys still here? It's raining! Go bring in your laundry.
The axeman calls out.
Fat woman.
She scarpers back to her house at greatly exaggerated speed. And hides in bed under the covers. The barber turns to the axeman.
You blackmailing me too? I ain't afraid.
The axeman regards the barber, then draws a hatchet from his belt, steps up to the barber and cocks his head questioningly.
Huh?
The barber eyes the hatchet's blade.
Aye.
The axeman swings the hatchet and the screen goes black. When the lights come back up, the barber is still standing. The axeman, however, is stuck in a gently rotating dustbin some 20 yards away, looking decidedly the worse for wear. The other gang members run over to him.
Did anyone see what happened?
His cronies all shake their heads and make to get him out of the bin.
Don't, my back's broken. Call for help. Call for help.
The cronies launch a flare which explodes in the sky above in the shape of an axe. In Jane's room, a tremor shakes the needle on her record player. She sits in front of a mirror and winks to herself. Smiling broadly, she starts to apply lipstick. Another tremor makes her draw a line of lipstick across her cheek. Rage, she marches outside and is confronted by the sight of hundreds of black-suited Axe Gang members advancing on Pigsty Alley, many of them wearing top hats. One of them grabs Jane's hair and throws her to the ground along with all the other residents. Some of the mobsters start busting up Donut's shop. He says,
"Hold on, calm down. You're hungry."
A gangster punches him in the face. The tailor crawls through his shop and peeks outside. A gangster pulls the barber up. Jane glances over at the landlord, who still has the plant stuck on his head. He hides his face in the dirt.
Keep quiet!
Brother Sum looks down at the axeman, who's still stuck in the dustbin, but now spasming and foaming at the mouth. Brother Sum laughs. A mother and her young son are dragged a little way away from the others. They're doused in kerosene by one of the mobsters as the residents look on fearfully. Brother Sum swaggers out into the centre of the square and asks,
"Who did this?"
"I'll count to three."
He holds up a cigarette lighter and sparks it up.
"One."
No one moves.
"Two."
The mother and her son quake with fear. With a disinterested shrug, Brother Sum lobs the lighter at them. The coolie steps forward and catches it.
"I did it."
Brother Sum just stares at him. Suddenly, all the mobsters charge at the coolie, brandishing their axes. The coolie jumps into the air, landing a series of flying kicks on the first to arrive. As the mobsters close in, the coolie performs a leg sweep, decking one, and a flurry of kicks sees off several others. He kicks one so hard, the gangster takes off and collides with two others, knocking them over. A group of gangsters close in and the coolie kicks one of them through the window of the tailor's shop. A gangster takes his foot off Donut's head and a wave of hoodlums charge the coolie. In the midst of the black-clad, axe-wielding gangsters, the coolie punches and kicks round and round like a whirling dervish, keeping the mobsters at arm's length. In the tailor's, the hoodlum, who came through the window, pulls himself up and turns on the cowering tailor with his axe. The mobster is hurled back out of the tailor's window with great force. In the shop, the now bare-chested tailor pulls down some large metal rings for hanging clothes on and slips them over his forearms. Outside, the coolie has grabbed one of the gangsters and uses him as a shield as the others close in. Suddenly, the bare-chested, ring-festooned tailor wallops a couple of mobsters in the back, knocking them over. As others come at him, he uses the rings on his forearms to fend off their axe blows and add weight to his punches as he wallops his way through them. He and the coolie take up a defensive position, back to back. They spring into action, the tailor using his fists and the coolie using his feet. The coolie leaps into the air and kicks a group of mobsters over. The boot of a car is opened and mobsters take out several Tommy guns. In his shop, Donut gets to his feet and glances at some staves leaning against the wall. Two machine gun-wielding mobsters have the weapons knocked from their hands by a flying staff. Donut grabs another staff and leaps out of his shop. He knocks the gun from another man's hands and smashes it to bits. He then smashes another man's pistol and floors him with a couple of blows of his staff. A group of axe-wielding mobsters rush him, and he whacks his way through them with his staff, sending them all flying. Donut decks four mobsters with a single blow. The square is enveloped in a cloud of dust as Donut, the tailor and the coolie take on the gangsters in a whirling, bone-crunching, skull-cracking, tooth-splintering, eye-blackening, nose-breaking martial arts tornado. When the dust clears, the pigsty alley chop-socky trio have possession of the square. Those are the gangsters that still can beat a hobbling retreat. That night, Brother Sum reclines puffing on an opium pipe. An advisor sniffs a packet of drugs and asks,
"Are the goods okay, Brother Sum?"
A servant knocks over a cup of tea.
"Sorry, Brother Sum."
Brother Sum gets to his feet and says,
"Look away, kid."
Brother Sum strikes him a vicious blow across the side of the head.
"Della!
Get rid of him! We're the bad guys! We're meant to do the arse-kicking, not the other way round! But our arses got kicked today, all because these morons posed as axes!"
He indicates Singh and the fat boss.
"Don't waste your time, Brother Sum. We'll handle this."
The advisor waves to some other mobsters.
"You take care of it!"
One of the mobsters hurls a hatchet towards Singh. Just before it hits him, he slips from his chains and drops out of its path. The advisor comes over to him and finds a piece of wire in his hand.
"Boy, can this guy pick locks? It's a living, give me a break. Pick that one too, if you're so good."
The advisor indicates the fat boss's lock. He beckons a mobster.
Come.
Then turns to Sing.
I'll count to three. Hurry. Ready? Three.
Two mobsters hurl their axes. Sing picks the lock and he and the fat boss fall to the floor. The axes sail over their heads. Brother Sum steps forward.
That's quick. Brother Sum, we really want to be axes. Give us a chance. Ever killed anyone? I've always thought about it. Then go kill someone to show me. I will.
Fatso nods in agreement.
Go on. Thank you, Brother Sum.
As Sing and Fatso turn away, Brother Sum gestures to a minion who brings him a cigarette and lights it. He turns to the advisor.
We can always find a use for that type of scum.
A car drives down a busy nighttime street. Sing and Fatso are sitting up on top of a large traffic light.
I've told you before, you gotta look tough. Tougher! Even tougher!
Fatso snarls.
Act the part and try to stay awake.
But it's tiring being tough.
Tiring? It's our living! The streets out there are filled with money and women. Whoever has the will and determination to seize the opportunity can get to the top! This is our big chance. We just kill someone and we're in the gang. Then it'll be money and women all the way.
He looks round at some traps.
Don't be like those beggars. Look at them. No ambition. Trash!
Sing picks up a fag butt and puffs at it. A man looks at him.
Who are you looking at, Four Eyes? I'll smash your glasses!
The man hurries onto a tram and yells.
Get lost, you beggar!
Come down here and say that!
You're really gonna kill someone?
That's right. First the Four Eyes, then the fat woman and all the residents of Pigsty.
But they're good at Kung Fu.
I can do Kung Fu too.
Oh yeah?
Didn't I tell you? I know Buddhist palm Kung Fu.
A flashback.
Hey there, handsome boy, stop!
The boy looks round.
Amazing. Do you know you have a special aura? You're so young, but you have the bone structure and chi flow of a kung fu genius. If your chi flow can be channeled, then you'll be invincible. Like the old saying, you cannot escape your destiny. The duty of upholding world peace and punishing evil will be yours.
Sure.
This is the scroll of the Buddhist palm. It's priceless, but as its fate, I'll let you have it for $10.
The title says Buddhist Palm Manual. The young Sing smashes open a piggy bank. Back in the present.
You gave him your life savings.
Yes. I was saving to study to become a doctor or a lawyer. But this was world peace.
He hangs his head as he remembers handing over his cash to the beggar for the scroll. Later, young Sing sits on some steps, avidly studying the scroll. Then stands in a yard, practicing the moves it advocates. He punches upwards and the leaves of a nearby tree rustle. Now, ready for anything, he finds some boys teasing a girl and yells.
Let go of the girl!
Moments later, the bullies have him by the hair and have taken the girl's lolly. Young Sing lets fly with a Buddhist palm strike, which the bully in question ignores and knocks him to the ground. The bullies then punch and kick him at will. The bully finds the scroll.
Hey, it's the Buddhist palm, the 2-cent kung fu manual.
He turns to Sing.
Have you killed anyone lately?
The bully throws the scroll at Sing. Then he and his mates proceed to wee on Sing's head. Much relieved, the bullies head off, their leader saying,
he's a fool and she's mute. Losers!
Back in the present.
I realised then that good guys never win. I want to be bad. I want to be a killer.
Fatso sees an ice cream vendor.
Ice cream!
Where? 2 cones, please. Make mine a vanilla.
Chocolate for me.
The ice cream lady stares as Sing and Fatso guzzle their ice creams. Sing says,
what are you looking at? Never seen free ice cream before?
They scarper onto a tram and the ice cream lady runs after them.
Look at her run!
The ice cream lady gives up her pursuit of the tram and doubles up, catching her breath. In a pigsty alley residence meeting, the landlady is giving the coolie, the tailor and donut a piece of her mind.
You're such kung fu masters. Go take it on the road. You can easily make a fortune out there. You belong in a circus, not here.
Don't say that, landlady. There must be a reason they're here.
Everyone has his reasons. We don't want to make trouble.
I'm glad you get it. The mob's mad at us. We'll never hear the end of it. Why don't you get lost?
Outside, the barber talks to the landlord.
Your wife shouldn't be so nasty. You okay?
The landlord whacks him in the face. Inside.
Masters.
The mother and children, who were nearly flambéed, kneel in front of the trio.
We have nothing precious to give you, but take this as a token of our appreciation.
Thanks for saving us.
The boy proffers a bowl of fruit. The coolie accepts the gift and the tailor cries.
Stop this crying crap. This isn't a show.
You're so cold-hearted.
Talking back to me, eh? You may know kung fu, but you're still a fairy.
The tailor camply runs a little way off.
Oh, it's no crime to be good at kung fu.
Once a fairy, always a fairy. Look at you. What's with the red underwear? Why not a diaper while you're at it?
Jane steps forward.
What's wrong with red underwear? Where were you when there was trouble? If it weren't for them, we'd be finished. Be reasonable. I'll reason with you. You owe me 3 months' rent. That's $90. Pay up or pack up. Don't worry, guys. I'll pay it for you. Think you're a smart ass, Bucktooth Jane? What's it to you, tub of lard? Bitch.
Calm down, landlady.
This is your fault.
Are you trying to kill us?
That's right, it's all your fault.
The landlady drops her fag and yells,
Shut the hell up!
The residents cover their ears and a glass of water shatters. The landlady lights up a fresh fag and glares contemptuously at the residents.
You think you can out-yell me?
Sing and Fatso are watching from cover.
The fat lady can really sing, and she deserves to die. Watch this.
Singh holds up a knife, takes a breath and hurls it. It bounces off a roof beam and embeds itself in his shoulder. He sits down on a step and Fatso turns to him. What happened?
What do you mean, what happened? You try it.
No.
Quick!
What then? Fire!
Fatso throws a knife and it sticks into Singh's other shoulder.
Sorry, you okay?
I think you should get closer and take better aim, okay?
Okay.
Fatso creeps forward. As he draws his arm back to throw, the blade sticks into Singh's arm. The handle, meanwhile, flies through the air and hits the landlady in the face.
Who threw this handle?
Handle?
Fatso turns round and sees the blade still stuck in Singh's arm.
Another one? Where's the handle?
God knows where it went.
Could it be from this one? Can't be.
He pulls it out.
Don't!
Sorry.
Fatso sticks it back in. Singh winces.
Are you trying to say something?
I just remembered I have something to do. See ya.
The landlady spots them.
Uh-oh, they've seen us. Stay back.
Fatso picks up a crate and a load of snakes drop out into Singh.
Don't panic. Snakes like music. If I whistle, they won't bite.
Please, no more bright ideas.
Two cobras rear up.
Oh, what the hell?
As soon as he whistles, both snakes bite his lips. He jumps up and pulls them off him. The landlady sneers.
Not you again, arsehole.
Get back to your business.
Yells a resident as the landlady runs off to Singh and Fatso.
Split up!
Split?
Legs whirling, the landlady runs roadrunner style after Singh, who also accelerates up to cartoon speed. They dash off up a road. Singh sees the landlady's reflection in one of the blades stuck in his shoulder like it was a wing mirror on a car. He goes extra super duper fast to pull away, and they crest a rise, launching them high into the air. They land back on the road and carry on running. They overtake a truck and come face to face with another heading straight for them. Singh slides under it while the landlady jumps over the top of it. She glides majestically through the air, rotating slowly. As Singh slithers to a halt, he's showered with the landlady's flip-flops, bra, packet of pills and other bits and pieces. He looks up and sees she's collided head-on with a billboard. She slides slowly down it as he slinks off. Back in the city, Singh is within the large traffic light that seems to constitute his home. His lips have swollen to grotesque proportions on account of the snake bites, and the veins in his arms pulse as he bangs the inside of the traffic light. The blades shoot out of his arms and punch through the sides of the traffic light. One bursts a car's tyre, making it spin out of control. Singh wobbles his ginormous purple lips and hammers against the side of the traffic light, punching hand-shaped dents in it. Following his final blow, one of the lights on the structure droops and the roof crashes down like a giant bin lid, shutting him in. Wearing a vest and dungarees, Fatso leans against a column outside a building. He looks round and finds a restored Singh standing behind him.
What are you doing here?
Looking for you? Weren't you hurt?
I'm fine.
How come every time you get hurt, you can always recover so fast?
I don't know.
Which hospital did you go to?
Don't remember.
Maybe it's better that way. Memories can be painful. To forget may be a blessing.
I never knew you were so deep.
All the sadness one can bear.
They watch an attractive woman walk by.
Flows down the river, no need to care.
Two men carrying a large bundle step between them and the woman.
Hey, get out of the way! Move, I'll slap you to kingdom come! Look at those four eyes carting around a coffin.
What morons?
In a temple...
Don't blame me for making you leave. As always, we'll let Buddha decide. Good stick you stay, bad stick you go.
The landlady, now sporting a plaster on her nose, shakes a stick out from a bunch. Written on it is, horrifically bad fate. At the Axe's headquarters, Brother Sum is entertaining the two men Singh and Fatso saw in the street.
Have some tea.
The men, who have talon-like nails, fumble their cups. Brother Sum leans forward.
We're grateful for some professional help. We understand the problem. Iron Fist of the Hung School, Yan's Octagon Staff and 12 Kicks Off the Tam School are all there. It's thorny indeed. Those guys at Pigsty are really good.
Their warrior days are long over, but they're still top fighters. This job is a great challenge for us.
Brother Sum turns to his advisor.
See? That's professionalism. Of course. They're number one on the list of killers. Expensive, yes, but worth every penny.
Wrong. The Beast is number one, the world's top killer.
He was so dedicated to Kung Fu, he went crazy. I heard he's now in an asylum. So you guys are the top killers now.
Strictly speaking, we're just musicians.
A song that wrenches the heart. Oh, where do I find a knowing ear? Great poem, isn't it?
Brother Sum grins. In Pigsty Alley, the coolie, the tailor and Donut meet on some steps.
We'll be saying goodbye soon. Who knows when we'll see each other again?
We're three of a kind. Wish we'd known before. Why don't we take this opportunity to spar?
Nah, I still have a lot to pack.
You're right.
They all turn, looking in different directions. The tailor fanning his face with a fan. Suddenly, the tailor folds his fan and the trio turn to face each other. They begin sparring, each in his own separate discipline. Donut uses a rolled-up mat instead of a staff. They duck, block and parry. The coolie jumps up onto the banister of the stone steps. Donut and the tailor launch into the air and both land on the banister, striking martial arts poses. Donut smiles and says...
12 kicks of the Tam School. Superb attack and defence. Impressive.
Iron fist, powerful yet delicate. Top notch.
Yang's octagon staff with its endless variations. Mystical.
Till we meet again.
The tailor overbalances and falls off the banister. The landlord and the landlady are dancing together in their apartment.
Lipstick marks again!
She starts walloping the stuffing out of her hapless husband. On the next balcony, a man and his wife are cooking their dinner over a Primus stove. On the floor below, a small boy scampers out of an apartment and his irate mother pursues him with a feather duster.
Stay there, or I'll break you in half!
In another apartment, a man flails furiously at a cockroach as it scuttles up a wall. He misses and knocks down a drape. Across the square, the coolie walks along deep in thought. He sees one of the assassins tuning a zither-like instrument called a guquin. The coolie carries on walking down a path, running between some sheds and a hedgerow. As he walks along, a sprig is mysteriously cut from a hedge just behind him. The top is also sliced off ajar. A cat pads along the tin roof of one of the sheds. As it jumps down, its shadow shows it being chopped in half and a gout of blood hits the wall. As the coolie reaches the end of the sheds, a light fitting is cut down. He turns and looks back at the assassin strumming the guquin. His shadow on a wall shows him being decapitated. His head, then his body, flop onto the floor. The tailor is in his shop, busy with his packing. The shadow of one of the assassins appears in the doorway. The assassin strides in and picks up a swatch of material. The tailor turns to him.
Sorry, we're closed.
You can make a suit in no time.
We're moving.
This is good material.
You know your stuff. This has high artistic value.
How high?
At least a few stories.
As the tailor holds the material up, the assassin punches through it. The tailor dodges the blow and lashes out, knocking the assassin back. He knocks his rings up into the air and catches them on his forearms. He and the assassin trade blows, the assassin clawing his chest with his long nails. The assassin leaps forward and swipes at the tailor, who ducks. The assassin's nails gouge deep scratches into the wall behind the tailor. The tailor knocks the assassin backwards across the room. As the tailor punches at him again, the assassin grabs hold of his wrist rings and yanks him through his shop door into the square. The tailor kicks the assassin, who backflips away from him. The tailor is about to attack again when he becomes aware of the second assassin playing the guquin. The first assassin joins his colleague. Brother Sum and his advisor are watching from a car nearby.
Insulting the Axe Gang. We'll show them. Let's kill them all and make this place a brothel. Don't block my view.
Brother Sum whacks his advisor out of the way. The second assassin shoots a blade from the string of his guquin. The tailor dodges out of the way, the blade nicking his cheek. The assassin launches an almost invisible scimitar from the guquin. The tailor blocks it with the rings on his forearms, but the impact knocks him off his feet. When he stands up, he realizes the rings have broken off. The assassin launches another spinning scimitar, and the tailor hides behind a garden roller. The assassin shoots a flurry of blades which slash into the roller. The tailor jumps up, spins the roller around and hurls it at the assassins. The second assassin stands the guquin on its end and launches a gust of wind which hurls the roller back across the square. A resident comes out of his flat.
What's going on?
The resident dashes back inside and the roller smashes into his front door. The assassin shoots another gust of wind that forms into a fist, flattening the tailor. Brother Sum and the advisor jump up.
Good. Don't block my view.
The residents closed their shutters, including the landlady.
Damn, I told those nitwits to leave, but the fight is on again.
Really?
Yeah.
Outside, the second assassin lets fly at the tailor with another flurry of scimitars. Suddenly, Donut leaps forward and knocks the scimitars out of the air with a spear. The assassins flip the Gookwin into the air and catch it on their knees. They're about to play when the landlady's window opens.
What the hell is this fighting? Who'll pay for the damage?
The landlord pushes her away.
Sorry, it's nothing.
The assassins launch another flurry of scimitars and Donut knocks them all aside with his spear, save for the last, which lops the top of the spear off. Donut takes a canvas bundle from his back and hurls six spears into the air from it. He leaps after them, grabs one and uses it to fend off the incoming scimitars until one of them chops the point off his spear. He lands and throws the shaft at the assassins, who launch another blade, which slices the shaft in half lengthways. Donut plucks two more of his spears from the air and uses them to fend off the torrent of incoming projectiles. He advances slowly towards the assassins. Donut somersaults to avoid a projectile, then jumps into the air and kicks three of the remaining spears at the assassins. He grabs hold of the fourth, letting it pull him towards them like a rocket. The assassins destroy the three leading spears. They stop Donut just before he gets to them with a cord from the Gookwin. The shockwave splinters the shaft of his spear and a second cord sends him flying backwards across the square. He lands on his feet, but his hands are trembling uncontrollably and blood oozes from his mouth. The assassins shoot more projectiles. The tailor leaps to push Donut out of the way and in the process gets hit in the chest himself. They collapse on the ground. The landlady appears at her window.
You know what time it is? I have to sleep!
The advisor throws an axe at her and she catches it.
Hey, fatso! Eat shit and die!
Die? In this racket?
Sorry!
Brother Sum kicks the advisor.
Get out of my way!
Hang in there, tailor.
The assassins launch another torrent of projectiles at Donut and the tailor.
Be quiet!
The landlady's epic screech blows the torrent of projectiles into oblivion and snaps the strings on the Gookwin.
Give us a break! Why push us so far?
As the tornado dies down, the advisor scuttles back in the car and Brother Sum whacks him. The assassins drop their broken Gookwin and look up at the landlady's window.
There's another master.
The assassins jump into the air and arrive back with the landlord between them. The second assassin punches the landlord, but the blow is deflected into the first assassin. He tries to hit the landlord, but the blow bounces off and he whacks the second assassin in the face, dislodging a tooth. The assassins try to hit the landlord, but he dodges their blows. The landlord bashes the assassins together a few times. They lash out, smacking fists painfully together, then kick back simultaneously, knocking the landlord high into the air. He floats back to the ground, apparently as light as a feather. The assassins come at him and he grabs each by the arm, bangs them into each other, then flips them both face down onto the cobbles. Inside, Donut and the tailor lie on a rug looking very poorly. The landlady stands over them watching inscrutably as the tailor expires. Fag in mouth, the landlady looks out of the door and sees her husband swinging the two assassins around like rag dolls, their feet chewing up the cobblestones as they spin. He hurls them across the square, and an aerial view reveals their spinning feet have carved a yin-yang symbol into the cobbles. The assassins spring to their feet and quickly restring the Gookwin as the landlady steps into the square in front of the landlord. The second assassin strikes a chord, which launches a horde of spectral knights in armor across the square at the landlord and landlady. She inhales an entire cigarette in one mighty drag, then lets out the most massive scream. It shatters the ghostly knight's weapons and armor, and then the knights themselves, stripping them down to their skeletons and then shattering those. The assassin's clothes are ripped off in the blast and they're thrown into a wall. The windows of Brother Sum's car shatter too. The landlady stands over the assassins.
It's the lion's roar!
I thought that was a myth!
Who knew the lion's roar really exists?
That's the last we'll see of them.
The landlady nods and looks over at Brother Sum's car, in which the advisor is panicking.
This is no good, Brother Sum! Quick, start the car! Start the car!
The landlord is sitting beside the driver and the landlady beside the advisor and Sum. A mobster approaches.
Boss, keep it down. Have you no manners? Get lost. People are trying to sleep. They have work tomorrow. Get out of here.
Scumbags.
The advisor adjusts his tie as the gangsters go, then offers the landlady a cigarette. She ignores him and turns to Brother Sum. She looks stern and wags her finger. She follows this with a cocked thumb gesture. Then clutches both her fists in a way suggestive of crushing a certain part of the male anatomy. Brother Sum nods his understanding and she cocks a snook at him. The car drives off and the landlord and landlady watch it go. In the car, both the advisor and Brother Sum are quaking with fear. With a trembling hand, Brother Sum takes a cigar from his pocket. With a wildly shaking hand, the advisor tries to light it and succeeds only in setting fire to Brother Sum's hair. He then makes matters worse by trying to put it out with the contents of a hip flask. The advisor then tries to smother the flames with his jacket, but to no avail. With his coiffure in conflagration, Brother Sum flaps about animatedly. The car drives on with the burning boss in the back emanating smoke and a rosy fireside glow from the windows. At Pigsty Alley, money is being burnt for the coolie and the tailor. An unwell donut lies nearby and talks to the landlord and landlady.
I can't hang on much longer. But having seen real masters like you, I can now die in peace.
Don't say that, donut. We're just ordinary folks trying to live in peace. Being ordinary is a blessing. Don't call us masters.
Jane stands up.
But you're such great fighters. If only you'd helped earlier, they wouldn't have to die this way. Like Donut said, everyone has his reasons. Years ago, we saw our son killed in a fight.
Fag still smouldering in mouth, she gives the landlord a kiss.
Revenge is a vicious cycle, do you understand?
The barber.
Then why don't you train me to be a kung fu master and I'll avenge them?
Becoming a master takes time, unless you're a natural-born kung fu genius, but they're one in a million.
The barber does some rather inept kung fu moves and walks over to the landlady.
Obviously, I'm the one.
The landlady punches him in the face and keels over.
Don't think so.
The landlord.
Everyone, we swore on our lives we'd never fight again, but we broke that promise today. For your own safety, please all leave.
Donut grabs hold of him.
In great power lies great responsibility. There's no escaping from it.
Donut, you're hurt bad. Rest now.
What are you preparing to do?
Why don't you speak Chinese?
Donut snuffs it.
Donut!
Everyone rushes over and crowds round the deceased Donut. The next morning in town, Sing and Fatso are riding on a tram. Sing looks at a bespectacled man sitting opposite.
I know you, Four Eyes!
You seem prejudiced against the sight challenged.
That's right, especially gold-framed Four Eyes!
To underline his point, Sing does a few kung fu moves. The man slaps him and repeatedly smashes his face into the seat.
Gold frames are perfect for clerks. I think I look good, so why keep picking on me?
Fatso stares blankly at Sing.
Help me!
The man smashes both Sing and Fatso's faces into the seat.
Help me, help me! Wanna play punks? The dragon style, the tiger style!
The undynamic duo stagger off the tram.
Come down here and I'll smash your glasses! Come on!
He turns to Fatso.
You know I'd do it, right?
Fatso nods.
Swear to it! Swear!
Fatso shakes his head and Sing punches him.
Have you no respect? Where were you when I needed you? What's that? You sound like a whip. That's why we always get beat. We haven't gotten anywhere. No killing, no arson, no robberies, no rapes, because your fat ass is in the way. You're a numbnut.
He sees the ice cream seller.
Follow me.
Throwing his jacket over his shoulders, Sing marches across the street and tries to open a compartment in the ice cream seller's cart. It's locked.
It's a stick-up! Where's the money?
He jabs a knife into the top of the cart and grabs her.
Where's the money? What are you looking at? I'm serious!
He pushes her back onto the pavement, then picks up the knife and hauls her up.
I kill people for less! Give me the money! Speak!
They stand beneath a poster for a Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers movie, mirroring the couple's pose on the poster. The woman just stares at Sing and a tear rolls down her cheek. Sing's face softens. Fatso checks in the cart. The money's in here! Sing joins him and they find a tin containing a few coins. Sing pockets them. He turns around and sees the woman holding another tin. She signs to him with hand gestures, revealing she's deaf and mute. She opens the tin, revealing the lollipop the bullies had tried to take from her when she was a young girl. Sing stares at it and remembers the incident when he was a boy.
Let go of the girl!
Still clutching the lolly, the girl falls on the ground and cries as she sees young Sing getting beaten up and peed on by the bullies.
He's a fool and she's a mute, losers!
Fong, the mute girl, goes over to pee-soaked Sing as he picks himself up and signs something to him, then offers him her lolly. He gets up and runs off without taking it. She watches him go. Back in the present, Fong once again offers Sing the lolly and smiles. He knocks it aside and it smashes against the wall. He and Fatso run off. Sing turns to Fatso.
Don't follow me anymore! You're dragging me down! Go home and raise pig!
He gives Fatso the coins and pushes him away. Fatso comes back and Sing kicks and punches him away.
Go before I kill you!
Fatso offers Sing a bottle of soda he took from the ice cream cart. Sing grabs it and Fatso runs off. Sing mooches dejectedly away a few paces up the street, then sits down on the pavement and hangs his head. Two black-suited gangsters walk up to him. They haul him up and march him into a plush club where elegantly dressed people are dancing to a white-suited band on stage. Sing looks around, taking in his surroundings, then nods and wags his fingers in time to the rhythm. Someone yells at him.
You! What's your name?
He looks round and sees the advisor sitting at a table nearby. As he approaches, the advisor gets up and puts some money in Sing's pocket.
Go get some new clothes. You're now an axe. For real? Someone's waiting for you.
The advisor leads Sing through a beaded curtain into a back room.
Brother Sam! One look at you and I knew you'd do anything. Right! You just needed your chance. Damn right! We have an assignment for you. Anything, Brother Sam!
That night, a car pulls up outside the atypical pathology centre. Some gangsters, the advisor and Singh get out of the car and go over to a wire fence surrounding a large building. Singh reads a sign.
Abnormal Human Research Center. What's that?
A mental asylum.
Some soldiers are on the other side of the fence.
They have troops!
Ah, just Boy Scouts.
Thanks! Oh, no worries. When the Boy Scouts change shifts, you have exactly 5 minutes. Follow the arrows on the map, go to the last cell, and get the man inside there out. Here's your tools.
A gangster cuts a hole in the fence with wire cutters.
What about you guys? Where are your lookouts?
As Singh steps through the hole in the fence, a wind blows up. He looks up at the asylum with trepidation as a whirling mass of cloud spins above it.
5 minutes! Hurry!
Singh scuttles off towards the forbidding building as lightning flashes across the sky. Inside, he jogs up a corridor, carrying the bag of tools, and runs through a door to his left. Following the map, he makes his way down a gloomy corridor and looks in through a metal door's spy hole. He recoils and runs on. An arm shoots out from another door and grabs his bag. He struggles to free it, but then in panic, he leaves it and runs on. Singh trips and falls down a flight of steps in the dark. At the bottom, he picks himself up and sees he's in a long, narrow corridor. He runs down it, turns a corner and sees a cell door at the end of the corridor. As he watches, the door opens and a tidal wave of blood pours out into the corridor, flooding towards him. As he stares, the blood vanishes. Steeling himself, he walks towards the door, which is still closed. A frog hops past him in the corridor. He stops and listens at the door, then examines the lock. He bends a piece of wire and unlocks the door with it, then pauses for a second before yanking it open. Inside, he finds a middle-aged, bespectacled man reading a paper. This is the Beast. The Beast regards Singh placidly. Later, the Beast is seated on a chair in the middle of the Axe Gang's headquarters. Now wearing a suit, Singh is amongst the other gangsters surrounding him. Brother Sum yawns and the advisor turns to the Beast.
The world's top killer indeed looks the part. It's only a title. Cut the bullshit. We want two people killed. Name your price.
Name my what?
I've killed so many people, just trying to find a worthy adversary. So far, I've never found one. That's why I stayed inside. Had I met my match, I'd have been out long ago. To tell you the truth, if you find me a worthy opponent, I'll do it for free. No charge. Do you have someone? Yes, we've got absolutely top-notch fighters. You're in luck. But first, will you show us some moves? Not that we don't trust you, we just want to see you in action. You numbskulls aren't worthy.
Brother Sum snaps his fingers and summons Singh.
He doesn't look the part. The slippers are a little crappy, but he'll clean up well. You sure you've got the right guy? Absolutely, I swear I did exactly what you told me. Please show us some moves, Mr. Beast. Don't make it hard for me. You're crazy. You know what this is, old man? Ever seen a fist this big? Don't force me to fight. I scare myself when I fight.
Really?
Try me.
Singh quickly taps the Beast on the head and hides behind a statue.
Is he okay?
One of the gangsters punches the Beast in the face.
So, you say you can fight?
Harder. Harder.
You hit like that and call yourself a gangster?
The mobster looks at Brother Sum, then pulls a gun. The beast grabs it from him.
An import?
The gangsters surround him, brandishing guns and axes. The beast holds the revolver to his own temple and pulls the trigger. In slow motion, he catches the bullet between two fingers. The gangsters look on amazed.
In the words of Kung Fu, speed defines the winner.
He drops the bullet on the floor. Brother Sum gets to his feet.
The beast is the best of them all. The Axe Gang salutes the beast.
The mobsters all bow respectfully to the beast. The beast gets up and walks over to Brother Sum. He and the other mobsters straighten up. With a knowing half-smile, the beast walks towards a table and chairs and raises his left leg in the air, then swings it down, smashing the table in two. The sheer force of the movement cuts through the floor and wall, blasting a hole into the casino next door. The terrified gamblers all run out of the casino, save for two sitting at a table. The beast leaps over to the table. He smiles at the gamblers, who turn out to be the landlord and landlady.
The real masters are all here.
Only the world's top killer has such an aura.
Likewise, such presence. You two must be the famous fated lovers. Paris.
And Helen of Troy.
A pleasure indeed. We're here to deal with the Axe Gang and only the Axe Gang.
Brother Sum.
You should have killed me last time. Coming here today, you're digging your own grave.
You're living on borrowed time. Today, I've brought you a gift you can't refuse.
She points to a large funeral bell.
What's this? A funeral bell? With the beast here, let's see whose funeral it is.
So you're on their side?
Don't get me wrong. I only want to kill you or be killed by you.
No, no. Actually, I just want to kill the two.
The landlord laughs.
What do you think?
The good cannot coexist with the bad. You can't escape your destiny.
So be it. Let's do it. Okay. Let's do it.
Brother Sum and his mobsters back away apprehensively. The landlady, still with fag in mouth but now minus her rollers, kicks the table she's sitting at in half. The beast stops her foot with one hand and smiles. The landlord jumps up, slamming both his feet into the beast's face. The beast throws them back, saying,
"Hit me harder! I can take more!"
The landlady and landlord leap, spinning into the air. The landlady punches the beast while the landlord kicks him in the face.
Good try, but a little off target.
The landlord and landlady leap into the air once again and fly at the smiling beast. The beast punches them both in the face before they can land their blows. They both fall to the floor. Brother Sum and his advisor snigger. The couple bounce back up off the floor and fly at the beast, who kicks them both back through the hole in the wall into the Axe Gang's headquarters. The beast jumps in between them and kicks the landlady aside. The beast then attacks the landlord with a flurry of punches, which the landlord expertly deflects. Until one punch gets through, the beast knocks him off his feet into a wall and he collapses on the floor. The landlady jumps down behind the beast and once again inhales her entire cigarette in one massive drag, inflating her chest. She then lets rip with her lion's roar yell. The landlord covers his ears and is swept away by the blast. The beast grins as he's swept backwards by the force until the landlady runs out of puff.
The lion's roar!
He leaps forward and kicks the landlady in the face. The landlord jumps up and the beast blocks his kick. The landlord grabs the beast's wrist and spins him around, but the beast manages to land on his feet. The beast then twists the landlord's wrist, creating a shockwave that shatters his shirt sleeve, then spins him and floors him. The landlady cracks a wooden pole against the beast's skull. He grabs the end of the pole and gives it a twist, which splinters the wood and the landlady's shirt sleeve. The landlord picks her up and rotates her to stop the spin, flipping her. The beast jumps at the couple and kicks them both across the room. They crash through a gaming table and pick themselves up. The beast kicks a blackjack table at them and it knocks them still further back. They land beside the funeral bell. As they get up, the beast comes at them with a series of punches. He hits the landlady and kicks her backwards. He knocks the landlord's feet out from under him, then punches him. He flies backwards, breaking the wooden support for the funeral bell. The landlady hits the funeral bell, knocking some rope bindings from it. As the beast approaches, she jumps up and kicks him back, then hits the bell again. The beast hits her a couple of times, but the landlord intercepts him. The landlady hits the bell again. Having knocked the landlord aside, the beast attacks the landlady again. She tries to fend him off and also keeps hitting the bell. The landlord returns and kicks the beast away. The landlady knocks the top off the bell. The landlord picks up the topless bell and holds it as a giant megaphone for his wife. The beast's face falls as she takes a huge breath and unleashes the lion's roar down the makeshift loudhailer. The floor is ripped up in front of the beast. Then the shockwave hits him and he's knocked off his feet. He's hurled away in a cloud of debris and broken furniture. Several of the mobsters are caught up in the roar and thrown down the corridor. As the tornado subsides, the debris all comes to rest. Now looking much the worse for wear, the beast crawls to his knees. The landlady holds the bell over the beast, pointing it like a cannon at him. The landlord covers his ears. The beast holds his hand up.
Wait! I didn't know the lion's roar could be done with the speaker. I've lost.
He bows his head and the landlady puts the bell down. Immediately, the beast fires two darts, which the couple catch in their teeth. He stabs the couple with the blowpipes. The trio fall to the floor and grapple together. The landlord holds the beast's head between his legs. The beast grips the landlady's arm and holds down the landlord with his leg. Brother Sum and the advisor emerge from cover. Brother Sum picks up a table leg and turns to the advisor.
Looks like they're not up to it.
Right, well, let's get them both while they're down. You do it. I'm gonna puke. I need to see a doctor.
Go to hell!
Singh picks himself up out of the rubble. Brother Sum yells at him.
You, come over here. Hit him. Go. Yes.
Over.
Singh takes the table leg and advances on the trio.
The head.
Of course.
Hit him on the head. Okay. Here's your chance. Got it. Oh, hit him! Hit him! Hit the shit out of him! Right! Hit him! Hit him! Beat the shit out of him!
Singh wallops Brother Sum.
What are you doing? You want me to hit him or beat the shit out of him? You're making me very confused.
He whacks Brother Sum again, who collapses with blood pouring from his head. Singh turns to the trio and smashes the table leg over the beast's noggin. The beast shakes with fury and throws the landlady and landlord aside, then walks over to Singh. He puts one hand on Singh's shoulder and clenches his other fist.
Wow, that's a big fist!
The beast thumps Singh, splitting his jacket and launching him into the air. He scissor kicks Singh on his way down into the floor and punches him so hard his head goes through the floorboards.
Why did you hit me?
Singh picks up a small bit of wood and feebly taps the beast on the head. The beast responds by hammering his skull further into the floor. When he gets up, the beast sees the landlord and landlady have disappeared. He looks round and sees Singh has gone too. The couple carry Singh away. Brother Sum comes too.
Where are they? How could you let them escape?
The beast angrily knocks Brother Sum's head round, so he's looking backwards.
No one gets away from me.
Back at Pigsty Alley's Buddhist temple, the landlord and landlady lay Singh's bloodied form in front of the altar.
Why did he save us?
Young people make mistakes, but at least he finally made good. Look at him, beaten to a pulp. Do you have any last requests?
With a bloodied finger, Singh draws a lollipop on the floor. The landlady and the landlord exchange baffled looks. The landlord leans in.
Hey, wait! Why don't you write in Chinese? I don't understand.
Elsewhere, Fong gently pieces the lolly back together. As she attempts to pick the sweet up, it crumbles and falls to bits. She looks sadly at the shattered lolly. Nearby, Fatso sits on the curbside, staring up at the big traffic light, which still has the hand-shaped dents in the side of it from where Singh thumped it. The beast arrives outside the Buddhist temple, his feet smashing holes into the concrete. He looks around, but there's no sign of the landlord, landlady, or Singh. The advisor and the remains of the Axe Gang appear behind him.
There's no one here.
Some gang members run past a sign saying, Chinese medicine. Inside the shop, Singh lies on the floor, swathed in bandages like a latter-day mummy. The landlord and landlady look down at him.
It's a miracle he's lasted this long. The herbs should help him.
Herbal medicine can only partly help. The key is his own body structure. All his bones and tendons are broken. It's odd enough he didn't die. It's amazing that he's recovering so fast on his own. It can't be possible.
Unless he's...
They stare at the bandaged invalid in front of them as his chest pulses. Outside, the beast narrows his eyes as he notices a butterfly emerging from its cocoon. The insect sits on a twig and pumps up its yellow and black wings. It flaps them and takes off, flying past the beast, who watches it go. The advisor comes over.
What's that smell?
The beast looks round at one of the tenement blocks. A herd of axe gangsters run into the square. In the Chinese medicine shop, the beast finds a heap of discarded bandages on the floor. The axe gangsters converge outside an apartment door. Inside, a newly restored Singh helps the landlord and landlady into some chairs. He takes her fag.
You mustn't smoke while you're hurt. Let me handle this.
The mobsters wait outside, axes poised. Singh opens the apartment's front door. Picking his nose, the beast steps out of the apartment. The gangsters are outside.
This makes no sense.
He looks down and sees Singh peering out of a doorway a floor down. As Singh goes, the landlord turns to his wife.
Who knew the beast could clear the chi flow and thus unleash the boy's true potential?
We should have guessed. He is the one.
Now wearing a white jacket with a mandarin collar and not looking at all the worse for his beating, Singh walks onto the steps outside. The beast smiles.
Is this for real?
You're still alive, you turncoat. Kill him, men!
The axe gangsters respond to the advisor's order and run at Singh. He effortlessly sidesteps the first man's axe blow and knocks him aside. As two more men swing at him with their axes, he dodges them and smashes them through a stone banister. As more and more men come at him, Singh thumps them all aside with equal ease. An axe-wielding mob surrounds him, and quick as lightning, he stamps on each man's foot, squashing them. The men all hop about in agony.
The beast laughs. Toe-stepping? That's kid stuff!
A man is thrown into the wall beside him. Singh explodes off the staircase, sending gangsters flying. He lands in the square and takes on a horde of black-suited mobsters in a whirling display of kicks, blocks and punches. The mobsters surround him but keep their distance. The landlady and landlord look out of the window.
If our son were alive, he'd be his age now.
If he studies hard, he could grow up to be a doctor or a lawyer.
A stuntman, more likely.
Down in the courtyard, Singh kicks and punches his way through all comers. He flips one man into the air and kicks him away through a stone banister like a football through a window. He then boots anyone who comes near him away into the distance. The unlucky ones crash through doors, banisters and other usually unyielding objects. Singh kicks a whole group of mobsters high into the air above the tenement blocks. They rain back down into the courtyard to enjoy a bone-crunching touchdown on the cobbles. The last remaining gangsters back away from Singh down a walkway towards the beast. The beast watches calmly as Singh thumps his way through the mobsters towards him. Eventually, they stand face to face, the unfortunate mobsters dangling over the balustrade or hanging out of windows. The beast smiles.
Not bad. Let's go.
Kayo, there?
Singh punches the beast on the jaw, then kicks him off the walkway through the stone banisters. In the air, he knees him in the face for good measure. The beast lands on his feet in the courtyard. Singh lands beside him and hooks his foot around the beast's neck. The beast straightens up and socks Singh back into the air. He touches down and they exchange blows at lightning speed. The beast grabs Singh's hands.
I can even stop bullets.
Singh stamps on his foot, then kicks him in the side of the head. The beast staggers, clenches his fist and straightens up. They trade blows and Singh kicks the beast over, then punches him before he can get up. The beast looks up and his trousers start to split. Singh looks on aghast as the beast's neck swells like a bullfrog. He leaps forward like a giant frog, headbutting Singh back through a series of doors and walls in the building behind. When they come to a stop, the beast laughs and leaps away back into the courtyard. He lands on all fours and puffs out his neck, bullfrog style again. Watching, the landlord says...
What? The toad style of the Quenlun school?
Oh, no.
Come see, Baila.
Singh runs up the banisters beside some stone steps, launches himself into the air and runs sideways across a walkway's banisters. The beast launches himself at Singh and misses, smashing through the banisters. Singh lands on a telephone line and bounces off it onto a walkway on the far side of the square. As he looks across, the beast comes flying back at him like a missile. He leaps out of the way and grabs hold of the telephone line. As he hangs in the air, he kicks several bits of falling rubble after the beast. Fearfully, Singh looks down and sees the beast in the courtyard below him. The beast leaps up and headbutts Singh high into the air. The beast drops back into the courtyard and watches as Singh flies up through the clouds. Singh somersaults past the buzzard. As he comes down, he treads on the bird's back and leaps still higher into the air. He flies on up towards a cloud and clasps his hands together as if in prayer. Then begins to fall headlong back towards Earth. The beast gazes up at the sky. The landlady turns to the landlord.
Darling, remember the palm move that falls from heaven?
That's the long-lost Buddhist palm.
Singh hurtles missile-like back towards the earth. As he gathers speed, flames burst from his clasped hands. The beast looks up nervously as the now fully flaming Singh hurtles earthwards, his downdraft pinning the beast to the floor. The downdraft grows stronger. The beast tries to get to his feet, but the wind is too strong. As the flaming Singh hurtles closer, the ground gives way under the beast and he lies in a giant handprint, like a swatted bug. The beast cries out,
I surrender!
Hearing this, Singh backflips away from the beast, his shirt having disintegrated during his flaming descent. He lands gracefully by the giant handprint and centers himself. The beast surreptitiously pulls a blowpipe out of his pocket, runs up out of the handprint and charges at Singh, who holds his hand out in a blocking gesture. The beast is stopped dead in his tracks, and the outline of a gigantic hand smashes through the side of one of the tenement blocks behind him. The landlord and his wife watch open-mouthed. Singh takes the blowpipe from the immobilized beast's hand and removes the dart. He drops it on the floor, then unscrews the blowpipe, one end of which opens like a flower. He steps away from the beast, spins the flower-like blowpipe in his hands, and watches it float up into the air. The beast asks,
what kind of move was that? If you want to learn, I'll teach you.
The beast breaks down and kneels in front of Singh.
Master.
Singh waves over to the landlord and landlady at their window. The blowpipe flower drifts on the breeze high into the air. Somewhere else, an airborne flower disintegrates as it floats through the air. The bloom drifts down beside Fong as she stands by her ice cream cart on a pavement. Fong smiles to herself as she watches the flower, then pushes her cart on up the street. She watches a small boy go by sucking on a large red and white lolly. A steady stream of mothers and young children are emerging from a lollipop shop, the entrance of which is adorned with several brightly coloured giant lollies. Inside, Fatso, now a smart-looking shopkeeper, is trying to keep a horde of kids in order.
Oi, tell him not to put snot on the glass. You too, put your pants on. No licking if you're not buying.
He spots Fong out in the street. Sing, also now dressed as a shopkeeper, looks out into the street and sees her. He steps out of the shop and the two face each other. They exchange smiles. As they stare at each other, they become their younger selves once again. Sing cracks a smile and Fong beams broadly back at him. He holds his hand out and she goes over to him and takes it. They run back into the lollipop shop. Out on the street, a snotty-nosed boy is licking at a lolly. The disheveled beggar bends down in front of him.
Kid, you have the bone structure of a kung fu genius. World peace is in your hands. Here's the scroll of the Buddhist palm. Because it's fate, I'll let you have it for only $10. Wait, don't like this one? There's more where that one came from.
He holds up several more manuals. The boy is hooked. ITFC audio description by John Walskill. Produced and directed by Stephen Chow. Written by Stephen Chow. Written by Zhang Kang Cheong, Lola Hyo, Chan Mang Kyung. Produced by Yang Bu Ting, Wang Zong Jun. Produced by Chui Po Chu, Jeff Lau, Han Sang Ping, Wang Zong Lei. Executive producers Bill Borden, Zhao Hai Cheng, David Hung. Co-producers Rita Fung, Connie Wong. Director of photography, Poon Hang Sang. Action choreography by Yuen Wo Ping, starring Stephen Chow. Co-starring Yuen Hua, Leung Xiao Lung, Dong Zihua, Chiu Chi Ling, Xing Yu. Chan Kwok Kwan, Lam Zai Chung, Tin Kai Man, Jai Kang Zi, Fung Hak On. Special appearance by Feng Xiao Gang, Zhang Yi Bai. Introducing Huang Sheng Yi, Yuan Kui. Visual effects supervisor, Frankie Chung. Costume design, Shirley Chan. Production design, Oliver Wong. Editor, Angie Lam. Music by Raymond Wong. Starring Stephen Chow, Sing, Hua Yuan, Landlord, Kui Yuan, Landlady. Kwok Qian Chan, Brother Sum. Xiu Lung Leong, The Beast. Dong Zi Hua, Donut. Chiu Chi Ling, Taylor. Xing Yu, Huli. Chi Chung Lam, Fatso. Kai Man Tin, Axe Gang Advisor. Kang Zi Jai, Harpist Number 1. Hakong Feng, Harpist Number 2. Zhao Gang Feng, Crocodile Gang Boss. Sheng Yi Huang, Fong. Suet Lam, Axeman. Azayo Liang, Axe Gang Leader. Ren Si Lu, Suzy. Ding Zhao Long, Mr. Gold. Zhang Wing Ming, Mr. Silver. Oliver Wong, Inspector. Chen Kai Shi, Rabbit Tooth Jane. David Hung, Mr. Big. Feng Min Hun, Four Eye Clark. Fan Tian Tian, Hooker. Lao Zhe Sim, Bully. Wang Shi Ying, Little Fong. Yuan Heoi Tian, Little Sing. Additional action choreography by Sammo Hung. Visual effects by Centro Digital Pictures Limited. Associate producer Nelson Chin. First assistant directors Sylvia Liu, Eddie Jung. Cameraman Wong Che Wai. Steadicam operator Lai Bao Quen. Assistant costume designer Raymond Kwok. Hairstylists Mike Say, Ronald Young. Copyright 2004 Columbia Pictures Film Production Asia Limited. All rights reserved. Columbia Pictures Film Production Asia Limited is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character or history of any person is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication and or distribution of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Produced in association with China Film Co-Production Company, a presentation of Columbia Pictures Film Production Asia Limited. Huayi Brothers and Yaihe Film Investment Co. Limited, fourth production company China Film Group Corporation. The logo of Columbia Pictures.